a permanent part of the U.S. Department of Labor. The Bureau of Apprenticeship works with state governments to ensure the fair treatment of apprentices. Today, apprenticeship programs provide classroom and on-the-job training to help develop a skilled labor force.
Hi, I'm Al Criazzo from Catskill Mountain Housing. You're listening to WGXC, Agra, Catskill, and Hudson.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
WGXC helps you sleep at night and stay awake in the daytime. Whether at work or play, in good times and in bad, no matter the weather, community radio brings you local news, agricultural information, music and sounds, oratory, and radio stews.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
Good evening. Thank you for joining. I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, your host of Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM. It's a wayfarm.org enterprise. Go visit there to help us stay on air. Race Talks is where we are every third Tuesday of the month from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. And we love to talk about the very necessary topics on race and ethnicity. We talk about race. Why, you may ask? It's simply to combat racism. Education is a key and discussion a must. So it is my hope that you too will come to know there's only one race, the human one, and many ethnicities. The bottom line is you'll find us here keeping it real on Race Talks, where
no topic is taboo.
Yes, you are listening to my guest. I would say my first guest, but she's my one and only fabulous guest this month, Sharon Mingo Y. She's an author and vegan, but she's more than that. And she's going to share all of who she is in a moment. I just want to let you know all about our segment highlights this month. This is the last in a series for race and wellness. Here, we're going to have the talk topic of soul food. This is going to be part one of two, talking about soul food, with the question being, is soul food really food for the soul? And there are lots of code words for food. And so we're going to have a segment that talks about, and I don't know if we're going to get to it this month's conversation. However, we certainly have another guest for next month's conversation on the topic of soul food, and that's Leah Penniman. We're going to play an audio a little bit after I introduce my wonderful guest, because Leah is a co-founder of Soul Fire Farms, and the idea with soul in the name, obviously we need to have her on air. But more than that, she is an upstate farming enterpriser. Lee has co-created the Black and Latinx Farmers Immersion, the BLFI program, as a container for new farmers to share their growing skills in a culturally relevant and supportive environment, which is led by people of color. Lee's book is called Farming While Black, and it adds to the curriculum of the BLFI as a guide to all aspects of farming on a small scale. Not all of us can be large farmers. And in fact, most farms are really large, which is why many people aren't having great food. And that's another thing about food deserts that we will be discussing. Anyway, with Leia, she has written a book that talks about the best farming practices to see how to use the whole foods and culturally conceived those recipes to share stories of ancestral nature. How did we come to eat the food that we call ethnic cuisine, and how to share the tools for the healing of trauma that's associated with slavery and economic exploitation on the land. And like I said, usually I'll have some audio or some video, which because I'm on the radio, it's only audio for those of you who are listening. However, this is a small bit that, again, we will, my guest, Sharon, and I will speak about a little bit after I play it. And it is indeed very interesting to know that food, of course, is healing. Mm-hmm. Food is the most important part of our health equation. So we will get to Leah Penniman's audio in a moment, and the other talk term and other segments, code words and Q&As, after I introduce again Sharon Mingo-Y, who's an author, a vegan. She's the owner of Super Memento Yay. I'm hoping I'm saying that right. And why I wanted her here, because she is an author to A Vegan Delectable, volumes 1-5. It's a cookbook, y'all. Welcome, Sharon. Please share more informative, interesting tidbits about yourself for our listeners.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much, Kimberly. I am beaming. I don't think they can see us. They can just hear us, right? Hopefully they can throw a smile.
She's beaming.
Yeah. And thank you so much. It's such an honor to be your guest today and have you be the host and to invite me. Something interesting. Let's see. You said a lot of things. Yes, I am a multi-genre author. I study literary writing, so that's my passion. And I took a detour and I wrote the vegan cookbook because cookbook volume, there are five, because I've been a vegan now for probably over maybe 16, 17 years. And so I've cooked a lot of great foods and people enjoy them. And so I thought, why not combine the two, my writing and my art in creating vegan food, so hence the cookbooks. But something interesting, Super Mementos Yay. Now, that's
Yay.
The initial, right? That's the initial SMY. And I wanted something that would brand me where fans and friends and followers would enjoy something that's super. It would be a momentous occasion every time we do something wonderful, and they will just all say, yay, and cherish that memory. So that's why I have that name for my business, Super Mementos, yay.
And that's a .com after that?
Yes. Yes, there's a .com.
So I'm going to spell it because I know you're going to share with people how they can get in touch with you and those things that you produce. But for those of you who right now may be in your car, maybe you're just chilling, watching TV and listening to us on the side, I'm going to spell out the letters right now.
Yeah.
And so that gives you time maybe to get a pen, because usually at the end, we're so quick, it's too late. So I'm going to do it now once, and then we're going to do it again later, right? It's Super Mementos, yay! SuperMementosYEA.com, correct?
There you go. That's correct. That's awesome. Correct. And if they miss that, they can just googlemyname.com for my author's website. So CharmingaY.com. So
right. And that's on the Race Talks website, but it's Sharon, Sharon, Mingo, Mingo. Okay. So I'm so blessed to have you accept my offer and invitation. People say, you know, Kim, why do you have so many Black people on your show? Because it's Race Talks, you know, where we talk about race and ethnicities. And there are, I always say, every single person, we are all our own ethnic identity, because no one's quite made up of everything that we are culturally or obviously biologically. However, I am an African-American or a Black woman. I like either term. And I think, you know, when I'm going through my circles, looking at people who are interesting and informative, the feedback I get, the people who are very interesting and exciting tend to be other people that are a little bit like me. So, but you come from some other location other than America, right?
Yes, my goodness. I'm from South America. I was born in Guyana. First British Guyana, then we got our emancipation and we divorced England or Britain. And so
you did it after we did, right? As Americans?
British
Guyana more recent, like in the 60s.
Shame on me, Kimberly, because I wrote a quick blog about that on my website and I don't remember.
Well, maybe we're gonna give you an opportunity to look it up, because I wanna know that. So we're going to do right now is we're going to play Leah Penniman's little introductory context of her book.
Yes.
And then on the other side of that, we're going to then have a chat what we think about what she said and how that can forward our conversation about what we want to bring to the table with the discussion of soul food, and answer the question, is soul food food for the soul, or is it something other than that? And again, I want to know what makes you a vegan and how you got onto all of that and, you know, all that good stuff. But first, you know, like I said, we can talk. So you think of that, the answer to, that's not as important. And I'm just chatting right now as I look to share the video, because it does take a little technical savvy here. And I should have something, as I call myself, people who know me, she calls herself the AI boss. AIboss.us. So I think I can click up on the button. And I just want to say, this is an archive brief chat with Leah Penniman, and from the Farm Report in 2018, which is still relevant today. So I'm just going to click on that, and you'll hear it now.
Thank you. Here we go. While farming was initially healing for me, for many African heritage people, it is a triggering and re-traumatizing experience. Almost without exception, when I ask Black visitors to Soulfire Farm what they first associate with farming, they respond slavery or plantation. As my friend Chris Bolden Newsom says, the field was the scene of the crime. Hundreds of years of enslavement have devastated our sacred connection to land and overshadowed thousands of years of our noble, autonomous farming history. Many of us have confused the terror our ancestors experienced on land with the land herself, naming her the oppressor and running toward paved streets without looking back. We do not stoop, sweat, harvest, or even get dirty because we imagine that would revert us to bondage. And yet we are keenly aware that something is missing, that a gap exists where once there was connection. This generation of Black people is becoming known as the returning generation of agrarian people. Our grandparents fled the red clays of Georgia, and we are now cautiously working to make sense of reconciliation with the lands. We somehow know that without the lands, we cannot return to our freedom.
Okay, that was very brief, right? In that small bit, she was mm-hmm. so concise talking about history. And she mm-hmm. was specifically talking about the American, which I consider the traditional American, African-American history coming from the South of America, or I should say within the South in America, because South America and South in America are two different things, right? All right. We're talking about that. Hey, were you able to find that out? The
yes,
that I mentioned?
Yes, actually, the U.S. got its independence in 1776, whereas
right.
We got our independence in 1966.
I thought it was in the 50s or something like that. So, yeah. Okay, wonderful. So, as a person coming from South America, does anything of what she says resonate with you? I know the idea of people going towards the cities, leaving the farms, and feeling that that somehow makes them a better person because they're leaving the agrarian, the, you know, living off the land and fending for yourself. And here, the slavery background is cotton picking and tobacco and things that make you feel like you were not human, right? Mm-hmm. You were another, a beast of burden, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you were really tied to the land and unable to flourish, unable to really do anything else, because anyone, and I'm not one, but I do know of some farmers, it's a lifestyle because it's from sun up to sundown. And it matters, the food that you create. And most people eat just what they make. So mm-hmm. I think, so for me, this particular piece was just incredibly informative. And I love the fact that she mentioned, you know, we need to go back to harvest, mm-hmm. you know, and to me, harvest means a bounty and, you know, some kind of purity of food. And I want to get into one of our top segments where we look at what's in a name and the labels that we put on food. And as a vegan, how you go about trying to figure out what you're going to put on your plate so you can feel on your sustenance and, you know, your soul within the food that you eat. So what are your thoughts on what she mentioned?
Well, there's a lot of things on my thoughts. I listened to Leah Penningman, and I noticed that she equates the land to freedom. And I thought, huh, I think that's a good analogy when the freedom is someone's choice to do so. But as you rightfully said, during racism, our forefathers, our parents, well, maybe not your parents or my parents, but they did not have a choice, so they did not enjoy it. As a little girl growing up in South America, though, agriculture on a very small scale was a lovely thing. As a matter of fact, I have visions of us. We had land, not modest size, and we would plant a kitchen garden, and we would have eggplant, tomatoes, we would have squash, pumpkin. And so Kalaloo is something a little different from spinach. It's similar to spinach, but thicker. And it springs
about, like,
a lot more water. We call it Kalaloo.
probably the same thing. Is that the same thing as collard greens, maybe?
No, because the collard green is robust and it's larger and thicker. But the Kalaloo, they're succulent. They're the size, the leaves are the size of, say, like a spinach. But except that it's thicker. And so I remember okras. I call it okras. You guys call it okra, right? And so I remember those great memories and the joy of digging the earth, tilling it, and then waiting to see the seed germinate and the little buds. And then to see that, you know, grow into plants that bore fruits and vegetables. So it's a great feeling. And I totally understand what Leah is saying.
Now, you've experienced that when you were a young person in Guyana.
Yeah.
But when did you come to the United States?
How old were you? Okay, so let me say this. So I've actually lived longer in the U.S., and I'm telling you and your viewers, I am not telling you my age. I'm forever 30. So, but
I've been 25. So I can be honest about that.
Yeah, I've been living in the U.S. for longer than I've lived in my own country. So I'm far into my country now. But I've had the privilege in living in the U.S. where also we had small, modest kitchen gardens. And we actually grew similar things. Well, okay, I will be honest with you all. Sharon did not do much of the farming and the growing. I'm a little lazy where that's concerned, and the bugs and the mosquitoes, but I saw them grow. So I did experience that. But on a serious note, though, tying this into veganism and the vegan diet, having been raised where I was accustomed to getting fresh foods, we did not use a lot of canned foods. We went to the markets and we bought the fresh vegetables. So I tend to use, I would say, 97% of everything I use and eat is organic. It gets pricey now, but it's organic and fresh.
Okay, so I want to stop you there because that just is a great segue into the what's in a name. And you mentioned organic, and mm-hmm. I have lots, since usually I'll have two guests, so there's not too many opportunities to bring in materials from outside. Mm-hmm. But I have right here something that talks about labels. So you mentioned organic. What does it mean to be organic in your mind?
Okay. I appreciate that question because that actually troubles me a lot, organic. And I often wonder, is Trader Joe's really selling us organic foods, or are they just labeling it that way? Is such and such a place? But what I actually consider organic would be anything that's naturally grown, and there's no chemicals in animal byproducts, and you know it's from the earth and that sort of thing. So I don't know if that answered you a bit.
That did really well, and because this is Race Talks, mm-hmm. and I just think it's really important for us to recognize that there is a difference in ethnicity where health is considered. All
yes.
ethnic groups, yes. we're grouping people by way of where they come from mm-hmm. or their heritage. There mm-hmm. is a difference. There's a study, and I'm not going to be able to tell anyone to go to see it, but this is what kind of transformed my way of thinking. They did a study of a small group of people in Italy,
mm-hmm.
but Italy in itself, it's not one of the largest countries in the world, but it has so much diversity. And if you just take ancient, though it wasn't called Italy then, but just the ancient peoples from that area, they're very different people. They eat very differently. And depending on where their families hailed from, their diet can be extraordinarily different. A lot of people think of Italy, they think of pasta, mm-hmm. pizza.
I love pasta and pizza.
Mozzarella, and then some really fresh tomatoes.
Right? Yeah. And those marinara sauces.
Olives, yum, yum, yum. But I love olive oil, not technically the olives, which is really strange. People think I'm strange about that. But anyway, so there was this group that really only ate red meat. And I'm saying that to a vegan on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They were very healthy
mm-hmm.
eating this red meat. Mm-hmm. But the same researchers found that most people, like almost every other group in the world, other group ethnic groups, including and specifically Americans, but African-Americans too, and more specifically as a group, didn't take well to red meat. It just stays very long in the body. It doesn't break down. It clogs the, you know, I'm not a scientist or a medical physician, so I'm not saying these terms correctly. However, they said that they thought it was very strange, so they wanted to look at this group. So they did a year, two, three, 4 year study on just them and found that because of their lifestyle, the meat got broken down really quickly. And so the proteins that allows for that to happen was very specific to their genes, their DNA. DNA that they passed down generations to generations, which is different. And we can understand that because African-Americans have genes that make them make us more susceptible to certain diseases because of a lack, therefore, of certain proteins in our chemical reactions in our bodies. So that was just like awesome. So there's no one-stop shopping or one kind of fix for good health, but there is something about being natural, right? So
being natural.
Because they are of the Mediterranean group. So they eat what's in there, you know, organic for them, right? So here, if you, you know, go to the East Coast, further east, like in Massachusetts or Maine, you'll see a lot of people eating a lot of fish, and there's different types of fish. So, you know, certain people eat salmon in some places in America, and some people eat cod in certain places of America.
Right.
But fish is a great staple. Talk to me about the difference between being a vegan and a vegetarian.
Okay, so, and I did want to mention just a little bit about that red meat business, because I actually stopped eating red meat as a teenager. I remember, and I was a very young teenager, just before I came to the U.S. in my country, and I was sort of into health even as a young girl, and I remember saying to myself, oh my goodness, this meat is so fibrousy. You're chewing and you're chewing and you're chewing. It's a waste of my time. And literally, I removed that from my diet. My parents, of course, were like, what? Especially my dad. You're going to get sick. Why aren't you eating? Blah, blah, blah. But I stopped eating red meat long before I became a vegan. Now, I will tell you this, and to my vegan brothers and sisters who are listening, I sorry for any, you know, distractions. I want to tell them that I love them dearly, but I actually feel that people ought to be able to eat what it is they wish to eat, what they choose to eat. And I don't have a, as long as they're being not being unkind to animals. Like, for example, there was this woman with the horse that she was beating the horse, and the horse, did you see that on the news?
No, the horse
was pretty much bones and skin. And eventually, she's one of those persons that offer rides, you know, like in the parks on the wagon things.
Oh, yes.
And the horse got sick. And the horse collapsed in the streets. Oh. And so now I think she may have problems with the law. So as long as you're not being unkind to animals, but to answer your question specifically, the difference between vegan and vegetarianism is that vegetarians are flexible, where they can have dairy, they can eat their cheese and their eggs and their cow's milk, and they can use honey. But a real hardcore true vegan will not even eat honey. Because as far as I'm, I love to say this, if I may indulge your listeners, honey is actually the bee's vomit. Pretty much.
Yummy. No.
I learned that in high school. So I know it tastes delicious before I became a vegan. It's really awesome in pastries and all that. But guys, you're really eating the bee's vomit. So I just thought I would share that with you. But
okay, so I see the little bit of honey left in our jar, and I'm thinking, good, I don't want any more of it. I think I've heard of something like that, but you know, and this is another subject, there's just not enough education when it comes to food in our school systems.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, it was the four food groups, and you're mentioning basically none of that would work for a vegan.
Well, actually, well, you know what? I like to ask people this question, and this is from our carnivorous friends and family. Both in college and graduate school, and wherever I go, vegan food is the food, the entree, the cuisine, whatever you want to call it, the options, the selections that go the fastest. And guess who are the ones that eat the vegan options?
Who?
The carnivores. And so when the vegans go, usually there's not anything. So we have to go early, quickly. Because the food tastes really good. So here's my question. You all are guilty, and it's okay. Here's my question. Are legumes, peas, beans, are they vegan by nature? Are they?
I thought so. Is that the right answer? Ding, ding, ding.
So are, let's see, is mint vegan? You know, the mint, the herb mint? Is that vegan? Is spinach vegan? They're just vegetables and herbs.
Very interesting. Is it vegan? Meaning, what is vegan? Like, are you asking, can a vegan eat it? Or
no.
Is it vegetables? What's vegan?
Exactly. My point is, I'm a trickster here. My point is, it's just plain food, vegetables, legumes, and both carnivores and vegans can buy them. It's just that vegans, because of their restrictions in diet, tend to eat more beans and legumes and vegetables, the same thing that carnivores eat on the side. So you'll have a hunk of pork chop, or you'll have a steak or your ribeye, or your trout or basher. I used to eat those things, you know, your butterfish and all that stuff.
Recording in progress.
But along with that, you will add a scoop of vegetables. You will add a scoop of rice or bean. We all eat the same exact thing. It's just that vegans eliminate the dairy and anything that's flesh byproduct.
Well, okay. So you did a good Q&A. I think I have to do one too, though. But you mentioned a few things that normally I would interrupt you and say, but I'm getting better at this. When I converse with people in my living room, they don't have a chance. They don't stand a chance. But I want to say first, Sharon, yay for you mentioning about beef and how you didn't really consume it as a kid because you were like lazy. That was me too. That was my experience. But I think as I got older, the food became less wholesome. Mm-hmm. So I think mm-hmm. the hamburger, I mean, it could just be me, but I love fast food. I love going to, I wasn't a McDonald's person. I was a Burger King kid. And I love the Burger King hamburgers. And when I went home, you know, my mother wanted to make a hamburger. It would take me so long to chew my mother's hamburger.
Wow.
That I didn't think I liked beef. And she was like, but this is the same thing that you get at Burger King. And I was like, no, it's not. And you know, it wasn't, because she was buying beef that may have less, diluted with other products maybe, or fat, less fat or more fat. I don't know.
So he's giving you the real deal, while Burger King is giving you the manufactured version of beef.
Right.
And that's what tastes there.
Yeah. And that's what I came to know as, you know, delicious. Now I can't eat it. My body just reacts negatively to even the smells of certain food. Now, I can't say I don't always try, because there's a certain, you know, it's a cultural thing, like if, you know, like comfort food, they would say, you know, that you like it as you get older, not because it tastes good so much. It can be because it tastes good, to be honest with you. I'm not a foodie, so I know a lot of people who love food and it just does really taste good. But it's just, it brings us back to a time when life was, in my case, simpler as a child. So I think this is a good segue to soul food. You know, is soul food food for the soul to keep us heart healthy and in good spirits? And, or is soul food what we're culturally equipped to enjoy, or, you know, from back in the day? Like for me, my mother was Patricia Ann Irwin. I'm going to give her a shout out. She passed away in her 50s, so very young. But she was a great cook. People paid for her to cook for them. Whenever she made anything, everyone was lining up to eat it. She can make anything taste wonderfully well. But even as she got older, she stopped putting a lot of seasoning in the foods. And she lost her ability to taste certain things even. So I think over time, when we're eating things that aren't healthy for us, our body breaks down a little bit faster. And so if you're eating really good, healthier foods, like you were saying, it's really not a whether you're vegan or vegetarian, it's more about how the animal is treated to some degree.
Yeah. And
they say animal well, then what they produce for you is helpful and wholesome, and maybe even great for the soul, in the sense that it's a happy animal that, you know, we don't have to eat human flesh, but there is a historical understanding that in science, it was due to Homo sapiens eating the flesh of animals due to being able to use fire, that allowed our brains to develop in a way that we have. So I don't know all about that, but I do know that when it comes to, I will agree, they're scientists, but when it comes to treatment of foods, we can see that quite clearly now. Treatment of animals, we can see that quite clearly now by how we talk about hens and the eggs, right? We go from, there's free range, and now there's something higher than free range. There's pasture raised. So, what's the difference when we're talking about labels from free range to pasture range? And it's basically the ability of the animal to go free and live off the land as you know, it was made to. So is that what you're saying too, when you talk about animals being treated fairly or badly? Even the animals that we would eat or we raise to eat, like pork and...
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about agriculture and science and all that sort of thing, but I believe that whatever is created, and I'm a Christian, so I'll say God, whatever was created ought to be treated in a kind way, and including animals, including pets and that sort of thing. Now, you would not see me wearing fur. It's lovely, it's luxurious, but I will not wear fur. Why? Because I feel that, and this is not because I'm a vegan, this is just how I feel as a human being, I feel that those animals are lovely and exotic animals, and there's absolutely no need now. Back in the day, I think in the Ice Age and whatnot, there was a need for clothing and whatnot. But I think in this modern day, in our society, we have Yi, whatever his name is, making all these fabulous clothing and trying to resurrect the Gap and all that stuff. We don't need to be killing tigers and bears and whatever it is you make the, you know. So that's, I feel that's inhumane and that's unkind to animals. And in most cases, you do not eat the flesh of those animals, in most cases. I know there are some unusual human specimens of our kind that probably does. But normally, we weren't raised with people saying, oh, I'm going to go buy a pound of tiger meat. That was not the normal thing. So I feel as though you're extincting, you're wasting those animals by killing them. And then to answer your question, yes, I feel the farmers ought to not cut corners and treat their livestock, their animals well, I don't want to say humane way, in a way that's legal and kind and, you know, and that sort of thing. So I'm a vegan, so I'm really terrible discussing meat and raising animals and that sort of thing. I really don't have a lot of knowledge in that, but I will tell you, my choice was never to be a vegan or a vegetarian. I fought it. I had no desire to be either. But my body changed about maybe 17 plus years ago, and it repelled, it rejected dairy, and then it rejected cheese and meat and that sort of thing. I just could not. So I was very upset, really. And then eventually, once I realized that my body had rejected dairy and meat and that sort of thing, within a short span of time, I accepted veganism and became a vegan, a happy vegan, not malnourished in any way.
I like that, what you're saying. Like I said, I have time to bring in some materials. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to, you mentioned, you mentioned a lot, but the idea of food and the additives that we bring to our food. So even mm-hmm. if we do eat a vegetable,
right,
we bring animal fat sometimes and animal byproducts or animal products to mm-hmm. the vegetable. One of my favorite vegetables is green beans. And I think everyone listening, when they think soul food, it has to go on the green beans. Some kind of pork fat, I think. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I know. And then I try to not add the pork fat, but, you know, butter it up. But butter is
right.
What you just mentioned. And then there was the time when lard was acceptable. Mm-hmm. And I still don't know what lard is. I do use olive oil now. Mm-hmm. I have to say, because of being around Italian or Italian Americans, I get really good quality olive oil, and it's just divinely delicious. Mm-hmm. So I have Mexican American, or I should say, actually, she's Mexican from Mexico, but she lives in the United States now. But I met her when I was in Germany, so it doesn't matter. But she liked to use olive oil for her eggs. Mm. And I never saw anything like that. I was like, wow. I would use butter, or I would just use water, to be honest with you. Sometimes when I try to be healthier, just something to have it, you know, be able to fry it a little bit in. So she just kind of let me see that, you know, there can be a still great taste with just changing a little bit of what we are additives to our food. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, it can be a plant based and not really an animal based product. So yeah, there's this article about, you know, butter is better, and you laugh, but if I think you would say it was definitely better than margarine, right? These other products that humans make, you know, like, what are we really eating in fast food? The chains, you know, they did the potato, which is supposed to come from the land, and it doesn't go away in a McDonald's french fry box. They were showing how you could put that somewhere and it will never get moldy or disintegrate like any natural product, and it will stay. I mean, I don't think it would stay the same quality of type of food you would get if it's hot and fresh off the out of the, I don't know, grill or the basket there, but it does, but it doesn't get old. It doesn't, oh, it doesn't wow. get moldy.
I never, knew that. I was unaware of that fact.
That wow. is a true fact.
Wow.
Yes. And then they're talking about cereals now. I have an mm-hmm. article here. It's the General Mills Mills. And I like their total because that seemed like it was wholesome. But it says General Mills cereals dump artificial flavors. The whole idea of artificial. How could they yeah. ever have been something one would want in their diet? All the yeah. Kellogg's, you know, all of the cereal that we buy with sugar in it. And then yeah. we wonder yeah. why our children... Mm-hmm. are either obese or yes. sickly, or they don't want to go out because part of, you know, I can't think of cereal ever being soul food. You know, I don't think, I always liken it to maybe my grandparents, you know, what,
well, I'm not sure.
Would they even look at this stuff and call it food, right?
Unless you're thinking of plantain porridge or one of the soul foods, one of the stuff, the porridges that would, or what's the slang, with cornmeal it's made of, I don't remember what it's called, but oh my goodness, trust me, butter is better, and it's, and
yes, you're reading it. I just want to make sure you
yeah,
know
no topic is taboo in whatever we're discussing here today, but yeah,
you're my but, favorite guest.
Yeah, I had to try to remember that. Yes, but you know what? One of the things that I maintain in all five of my books is natural food, organic. So, for example, in my books, I show people how to get the fruits and use the simplest way to juice the fruits. You don't even have to use that juicer machine thingy. You can literally blend the fruits. Or depending on what it is, for example, if you were making cucumber, say you're making ginger with cucumber a juice, and you're going to use, let's say, maybe
no honey.
Blueberries, yeah. that sort
I
of
a question.
Yes.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but no honey. Can we use maple syrup? It's from
you can
a tree.
Use, you can use maple syrup. And you can use regular cane sugar. I use brown cane sugar.
Okay.
And I mean, you can use honey. No one is telling you not to. By all means, I just needed to be wicked and naughty by reminding us where the honey came from. But it's healthy.
There was a children's book author who said no to honey because it was a product that came from an animal and bees mm-hmm. are animals.
Yeah. And it's
like,
not
it
bees.
Makes you, oh, it makes you have, like, if you wake up with, what do you call it, sleep? That's what we call sleep in your eyes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, you know,
That crusty residual stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Then coming from milk, butter, mm-hmm. cheese, and those are my staples. Oh, God. I really, you know, food products. I mean, meat, mm-hmm. Animal products. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
But what's wrong with a healthy vegetarian diet? A vegetarian diet gives you that flexibility. So you're still able to enjoy dairy, but it's not the animal flesh or the meat. If I had my choice, I would have been a vegetarian.
Oh. No, my body is like yours. We must be from the same ethnic group.
Oh my goodness.
Because not only did I not want to eat beef, the real deal. And even now, like when I get the organic, because I thought, go organic, get the organic beef. Uh-uh. Wow. It's still chewy because I get it's organic, right?
Yes.
It's not, and it's 80, yes. 85, 90% beef, you know, with little fat. So it's just, I'm feeling the way you're feeling it. And if, well, I'm a little bit older than I was as a kid. I don't mind telling people, I'm 52. And people say I still look the same, but I'm not feeling the same. So,
you look like you're 35, seriously.
Well, thank you.
No
so
kidding
much.
You.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
But, so I'm trying. I do want to mention exercise. So
yes.
Vegan, very first, I want to just say, I did a study, a research. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that came up So I was like, what are good questions to ask? And one of the questions came up was, are Black people vegans?
You know what? That's a good question. It's just so, that
are you Black? What are you?
That's a similar question as when someone asks, do Black people swim or do Black people go camping? Yes, we do. So I would say vegans or whomever it is that choose to be vegans, regardless of ethnicity and race. And I got to tell you that for me, for me, the only race is the human race. And for me, there's only right and there's wrong. So regardless of if you're white, pink, yellow, blue, Black, red, it's right or wrong. And the right or wrong has no relevance as to if you were pink, that means you're right. And if you were blue, that means you're wrong. No, there's only ethics and right and wrong in my world. And the race is the human race. And so I think it's important that we train our kids and we teach our kids that to love all people. We still maintain our self-respect and we still maintain others respecting us. But I feel as though we ought to learn to love the human race. And then that will help to solve half the problems that we have. And I was thinking of soul food. And when I thought of soul food, when I saw the topic, right, I said, you know, soul food, and you asked the question before, it has to do with your emotions and what it is you enjoy. That's the soul and what it is you love. And imagine that you're cooking this thing that you really enjoy and you really love. It I think it seeps into the food and the quality. And others can receive that love and enjoyment when they eat that food and even you yourself. So we could say that soul food is not only something that is Southern, that's Black people with the what is it that we make, the chitlings and the collard greens and the ham hocks?
Ham hocks and
that sort of thing.
All of that. Oh, well, mashed potatoes and gravy.
You know, I will want to argue that soul food is what comes from the soul. What it is that, and you alluded to it. What it is that you really enjoy, that comfort thing, when you're feeling a little that way, what is it that you keep turning to that makes you good? And so, and I feel you ask about exercise, and I will tell you all, it's a good thing your viewers can't see me. I have not exercised since last summer. I'm guilty. But this is what I do. This is what I do. I know. And this is what I do. I maintain a healthy diet. And the way that I eat now is exactly the way I eat as a youth. So I have 3 meals daily, could be 2. And they're not hefty meals either. One is breakfast, one is lunch, and one is lighter for dinner. And I have those. And rarely do I necessarily eat in between. And so I maintain my weight and, you know, I'm still active and do things, but I love me a tone. J-Lo, watch it. I'm coming. You know, I love the rips and the tones, but I've been lazy. Corona came and I have not, I'll be honest. But I watch what I eat, you know. I watch the cholesterol and I'm careful with what I eat.
Okay, so we are unfortunately coming down to our last few minutes of
Oh my goodness. Talk.
I know. And wow. I want you to share some information about your cookbook as far as what it is that maybe a favorite, whatever you want to mention about your cookbook that you want the audience to know. And my personal ask would be a little bit of a recipe, what one thing should I go get your cookbook to be able to, make and feel like it's going to be soul food for my body. But I want you to think about that because I want to add, just a few facts and figures because I did mention that I was going to share the facts and figures. And because you mentioned what you don't do for exercise, I just want to share that there's material that says that there's participation rates that dramatically differ by ethnicity as far as being active outdoors. They have activity outdoors, African-Americans or Black people, 9%. That's the percentage of people who are actively engaged in outdoor activities. Asian / Pacific Islander, 7%. Caucasian, white, and non-Hispanic, 70% engage in outdoor activities. And I believe this is just America. Hispanics, who I guess are of color in this rate, it's 12%. And then the other, whoever other would be, maybe that's even Mediterranean, I don't know what their other is, they don't show, would be 2%. So with 9% of African American Blacks and Asian Pacific Islanders and Hispanic, which we consider, and others, BIPOC in another terminology, Black Indigenous people of color, that could be another reason for why our health is negligible to that of European, Americans, Caucasian, white, non-Hispanics. And I just want to give you a tidbit. So I'm going to let her give her the last 5 minutes here. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that children and adolescents engage in 60 minutes or more of moderate to vigorous physical activity daily. Get your kids up and out. The sun is good for our complexion. It's good for our health, just like for our food. We want actively engaged roaming animals. If we're going to eat animals, and if we're not, we're going to be vegan or vegetarian. We still want a wholesome diet, which means we want maybe a cookbook. How do we get it?
Yes. You can, you can get, I will give you a quick, now it's summer, everyone is hot, so you want something to cool you down. So here is a KCG Emerald Delight. Yes.
Can you see? Ooh, that is so cool and delicious looking.
So this is a kale, cucumber, ginger beverage. And literally all you're doing, very simple. You're gathering up, I would say, a bundle of kale leaves, strip them from the stalk, the coarse thing. And blend that up in probably maybe 3 cups of water. And then you want to add maybe one cucumber, cut it up, blend it all in there. And then ginger, add a chunk of ginger. And then if you want to use your honey or maybe your maple syrup, it's okay to do so. But you can, this is where you add sugar to taste, because different people like different, amounts of sweetness. And you blend that up. And then here is where you're loving your food and getting intimate. You can use a cheesecloth. It's something that you strain. I'm sorry, I didn't have one here. But you pour it on. Yeah, or just use a large strainer. And you pour it out of the blender into your jug. And you press it to get all the juice out of what you've blended. I forgot, use a bit of lime or lemon peel in there. Blend it all up.
Okay.
Lime and lemon peel, the aroma, the flavor is so beautiful, fragrant, delicious, right? So you press all that out into your jug. And then you add maybe about 2 cups of ice cubes in there. You shake it up. And you have the most delicious, refreshing beverage for the summer. And it's all healthy. Nothing out of a can. Right? And I told you that from memory. I did not even read the rest. But
pictures are delicious enough.
Yes, carefully. But in my cookbook, I have 5. I have one for beverage, one for dessert, one for brunch, one for breakfast stuff, and one for dinner. I hope I got all of them. And everything is original. it's a fusion of American and South American recipes and ideas. So the taste is delicious. You can make them your own. You can tweak them. I see we're running out of time.
And yeah, so we're going to get that from you, if I can, from
you can go Amazon? To supermementosye.com or and that, if you go to my website, supermementosye.com, you will see all the cookbooks. You click and it takes you to Amazon.
Ah,
so you'll be able to purchase them from Amazon.
And yeah. I might try to get my local